Hello, and welcome to a Vashon Minute, where we take a moment to focus on one island issue or one island person at a time. I'm Susan McCabe, your host for this special Pride Month episode, where we are going to talk about life on Vashon Mori Island as a trans or other LGBTQ person. Here to guide us through that conversation are Brooke Osment and partner Lee Cataran. Welcome to both of you, and thanks for sharing some of your precious time with us here on a Vashon Minute.
Thanks for having
Welcome.
Us. Welcome. It's good to be here.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Let's start with your story. How did the two of you meet?
Well, I went off to college at a place called Rensselaer Polytechnic, and that's in upstate New York, Troy, New York. And I only lasted a semester there and immediately dropped out and moved back to Atlanta, Georgia, where my family was.
But you made some friends in the game design departments.
In the game design and in the theater community, and a lot of those friends were really wonderful, and so I kept coming back to Troy a couple times, and in that process, Lee and I connected because he ended up making a lot of those same friends.
Yep, I landed right in the exact same friend group in the game design school, and I ended up on a class that put me with sophomores, so I ended up with people 1 year older in Brooke's age group, and then, yeah, we met through them.
And yeah, we started dating, 12 years ago now? Sheesh.
I think it's...
Wow.
I think it's 10. I think
it's 10. It's 11. It was 2014.
2015.
Anyway.
It was 2015.
2015. 10 years ago.
Maybe the very end of 2014.
And we've been married for about 3 years now. And it's just been probably one of the most fulfilling things in my life is my relationship with Lee.
Yeah. What do you guys do together?
A lot of games, a lot of puzzles, a lot of hanging out and thinking together.
Lots of crafts. We're both very artsy, very crafty. So
we both do
you're
a lot
more
of fiber
on the
art.
Like stitch work and embroidery side. I do knitting. You're picking up weaving now,
yeah,
and I've done some weaving,
weave.
Spinning yarn, and then I do leatherwork, bookbinding, block printing. So we both do a lot in that area.
Wow. I have been fortunate to see some of both of your work, and it's very impressive.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Very contemporary as well.
And then when we're not...
Outdoorsy stuff.
Yeah,
hiking.
When we're not in the studio, we can be found in the woods.
Yep. In the woods.
Yep. We got a dog, and we go on long walks.
There's a lot of woods around here to be in. So.
Yeah, there
true.
Are.
That's
it's
true.
Fantastic.
Easy to get lost in them, too.
Oh, yeah. In a good way, though.
In a good way.
Yeah.
Right. Can always find Vashon Highway.
Absolutely.
So what was your life like where you were before you came to Vashon Island?
Well, both of us most recently were in Seattle, myself for about 5 years and Brooke for about two,
about
I would
two.
Say.
Yeah.
She moved out to join me. Prior to Seattle, I was first in upstate New York for that college, and before that, I grew up in Marlborough, Massachusetts, as a suburb about halfway between Worcester and Boston. It's not really a suburb of either city, but it's a suburb in Massachusetts, and yeah, my whole childhood was there. I haven't moved around much. It's been pretty boring.
I kind of had the opposite experience. I was... born in Atlanta, Georgia, and then lived there for a few years. And in 2001, my dad decided to take us to Switzerland, where we lived for 3 years. And from there, Minnesota, back to Georgia, Tennessee, West Virginia, Colorado, France. I've lived all over. A lot of my time, both in my childhood and in my kind of formative adult years, was spent in small towns in the South, in both North Georgia and East Tennessee. And so those are some of my favorite places on the planet, filled with some of my favorite people on the planet, and also some of the scariest people on the planet sometimes.
Yeah, so let's talk about the scary part for each of you. Lee, you lived in suburbia, and Brooke, you lived in southern small towns a lot. At what point did your gender fluidity, if you will, begin to become an issue?
Oh, early, very early. I was aware from a very young age that I had something up with my gender. My gender presentation did not match anyone around me in my age group, and that was very quickly a social issue for me, something that I struggled with for most of my childhood, was getting excluded, getting bullied, getting picked on for a gender presentation that I really didn't understand myself. I didn't know about my transness at the time. It was something that was very evident to everyone else around me because of how I was acting, but mm-hmm. I didn't have the words for
or
it.
At least so. Some sort of queer identity. I don't know that they could have picked out exactly what it was.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. But they knew enough to know that there was something going on, and that was in small town Georgia. That's not something that's acceptable.
Yeah.
And how was that for you, Lee, in East Coast suburbia?
Yeah, definitely, probably nowhere near comparable. I was raised Catholic. I went to private Catholic schools all the way through high school. And so I was very much in an environment where queerness did not exist. I met the first two gay people I ever met in different years in high school. And that was sort of astounding to me. It was not a thing that existed in my world. And it was very suddenly a thing of just like, oh, I'm in the theater. I was at an all girls school, which gets funnier every year. And we would steal boys from the local all boys school for our shows. And, you know, approximately 50% are not straight in theater. I would say,
right.
But yeah, it was an environment of invisibility. And it was an environment where I can look back now and say I had, frankly, an extremely prototypical trans guy childhood. I was almost entirely friends with boys up until about puberty. I was very much a stereotypical tomboy. I was very outdoorsy. I was very active. And when I finally made friends with a few girls, it was generally sort of the other outsider or nerd types. And then I went to an all-girls school, and things got very interesting very quickly. At some point from all of that, I should have probably known that there was some gender going on. I didn't think about it until sort of part of the way through puberty. I started mostly learning online, actually, about the existence of trans people, because I had suddenly in the last like 2 years learned that gay people existed, and that was mind-blowing to me, and I sort of started to figure out that I sat on that spectrum, and then I started to learn that trans people existed, and I started to think a lot more critically about my gender. But that didn't really come into play until the last year, maybe the last 2 years of high school, and I wasn't open about it until college.
You know, as I listen to you each describe your process, your growth experience, it occurs to me that here's a kid who only knows the experience that they are having, and you don't really understand what's expected of you as that person you're born to be, or what's different, or what the options are. Would that
absolutely.
Be accurate?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I definitely grew up in a role of strictly enforced gender roles that we never really talked about. Mm. And so as someone who was growing up as a young boy, I was expected to act in a certain way and believe certain things and behave in certain ways. And there was never a reason why, you know? There was never anyone telling me, oh, well, boys do this because XYZ. It's just, you're a boy, you should like this. And whenever one of those came up and it was jarring, and it was like, okay, well, I don't want to play football. I want to dance instead. Like, that was a problem for me in a way that no adult ever properly explained. It was very clear that it was a problem, but it was never given, I never had a reason why it was such an issue.
Yeah, just to add to that,
yeah.
Sort of a different perspective, I feel actually pretty lucky that I grew up with, I mean, despite the Catholicism, I actually grew up with parents who were pretty progressive in terms of gender roles. They had a very equal parenting style, and I was very much allowed to be that tomboy that I was. And honestly, that almost made it harder to figure things out. Because there was this assumed freedom of like, well, you can be whatever you want. You can be the smart kid. You can be the tomboy, etc. And none of that was supposed to have any bearing on my gender. So when I started bringing up the gender things, there was this clash of like, well, why can't you just be masculine as a girl? And that one took a while for my parents to really grok.
Well, that's...
They got there.
That's
got
a
there.
Complicated question.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard you both use a couple of pronouns. Do you have preferences?
Oh, boy.
I'll let you start. Yours are easier.
Yeah, I at least have preferences. He, him are always fine. I like... I have a very linguistic interest in neopronouns. The ones that speak to me most, I would say, are Z here. That's spelled Z-E. And then the conjunctions, I don't know what it's called for a pronoun, that the versions of it are H-I-R and then H-I-R-S for the...
cases.
Cases, sure.
The objective, the subjective,
how do I pronounce those?
Z is just Z, and then Z. H-I-R, I've heard it pronounced both here and higher. I generally hear here, and that's what I say. But also, I don't know, the thing I like about neopronouns is you can sort of make them up.
That's kind of cool.
I'm pretty open to, like, I've had people absolutely just ruin the formal usage of the neopronouns and just sort of say things that have, like, an X or a Z sound at the beginning, and it works. You know, I can follow what they're saying. So I'm not the most picky, but I do have a few preferences.
Brooke, what about you?
No preference whatsoever. Whatever pronoun seems right to you is.
Chaos Goblin.
Yeah. You know, gender is a performance, and I never got the script.
And you're winning somehow.
You know, that's impressive, and that just says to me, whatever people's biases are, whether they're about gender or race or ethnicity, it really is about the individual.
Oh, absolutely.
And when we allow ourselves to get to know the individual, all that other stuff melts away, I think.
Yeah.
So we're running out of time already. And I wanted to get to life on Vashon. So how is life on Vashon different for you from those places you came from on the East Coast and the South?
I mean, I truly love it here. This is the one place in America that I've ever found that has the kind of small town, homey environment that I grew up in, where you know your neighbors, everyone stops and says hello to you in the street, and you all, if not, you don't have to be friends with everybody, but you all get along as a community. And that was a deep core part of my experience in the South, which then, when I started to get hit with the exclusion and violence of homophobia and transphobia, really was shocking and jarring. So to come here and to have that small town experience again and have it be coupled with a town that is so welcoming to its queer community is really magnificent. I've felt truly at home here in a way that I don't know I've ever felt anywhere else.
Clearly the theatrical community has embraced you, Brooke, and you want to tell us real briefly what you're working on right now?
Absolutely. Right now, I'm in the midst of directing a production of the Rocky Horror Show, which will be showing at the VCA in the last two weekends of October of this year. So we've got our cast together. We've got our first production meeting coming up this Monday, and we're getting things up off the ground, and I'm so excited because, as I said, this town and this community is just so open and welcoming and wonderful. And so to get to put on a show like the Rocky Horror Show, which I truly love and have spent a lot of my life picking apart and studying.
She used to do Rocky Horror Shadowcast for how many years?
Four consecutive years in Atlanta, Georgia, every Friday night at midnight.
Every week.
Yep.
Wow.
So 200 performances.
You're
and
a
then
devotee.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. Played every role and then some.
Can't wait to see that.
It's going
to
be
so Lee,
fun.
What about you? How is life here for you?
Well, I definitely didn't have that sort of small town rural experience. I was in, I think it technically counted as a city. I certainly wouldn't call it a city. It didn't have a city sort of feel, but it wasn't a small town either. And it was in the Northeast where there's people you are friendly with, but they're the people that you actually talk to. You do not talk to people on the street. You do not acknowledge people on the street.
I understand that. I'm from Chicago.
Yeah. So first visiting Brooke down in the South, and then coming out here, Seattle was what I was used to. No one looks at you. No one acknowledges you. It's all, that's the pattern that I'm used to.
Seattle freeze.
Yeah, it worked for me. I was like, this is normal. But yeah, it really drove Brooke a bit wild.
Yeah, I couldn't stand it at all.
Both visiting you in the South and coming out here and sort of experiencing this culture where people just stop and talk to you in the grocery store and on the street. I've adapted to it and I've adjusted to it and I find it quite warm and lovely now. It did take a minute.
I'm with you. It took me a while to get used to not being anonymous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting. But like if that's a feeling I'm seeking out, I'll go hang out in Seattle for a day and just wander and no one will look at me.
No one will be, yeah, right. Yeah. You'll be ignored.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's great.
So one last question. And we don't have a lot of time. How does your transness impact your personal and your professional lives over the years now?
Well, I find that personally, at this point, it's a lot less present than it used to be. It used to be a point of contention with my parents. It used to be a point of contention with basically every system I had to interact with because paperwork, identity documents, even as simple things as my college didn't have a preferred name policy. Every semester, at the start of every semester, I would be emailing all of my professors and all of my TAs and basically saying, hello, this is the name that's going to be on the register. You need to refer to me as something else. And basically trying as much as I could to put out that it is unacceptable to call me this in class. I was not what I would say stealth. Stealth is when, as a trans person, you aim to be read as a cis person of your correct gender and do not talk about your trans history. But I wasn't particularly out either, and I was still very early in transition, so I was pretty sensitive to that sort of stuff. But a lot of that has faded. Like, all my identity documents line up now. There's none of these sort of, like...
I will say, though, like, a lot of the negatives have faded. A lot of the positives have, if anything, come back stronger. And I wanted to call out, when I was living in Seattle, like Lee was mentioning, I had a real tough time with that Seattle freeze. And one of the few things that kept me going was the fact that because, as a trans person, I had a queer identity, there's a queer community out there that I could tap into and start building friendships in a way that didn't really seem accessible just meeting strangers in Seattle. And that has held true out on island. Like, there's a queer community on the island. We've got a Discord chat going. We've got a few different ways that we all reach out and help each other out. And that community and that level of intracommunal support is, to me, it's one of the most rewarding things about being queer.
Yeah.
Do you have any fears for your futures under the Trump America?
Yeah. I don't currently have a passport, and my name does not match my name on my birth certificate, which means that I can't get a passport under current administration policies. And that is, frankly, one of the less concerning things that has been coming up.
What's more concerning?
Access to healthcare, access to community support, access to queer spaces. There is just, and I don't know how much of this is anecdotal and how much of this is just me being anxious, but there is a pushback happening on the social level as well as the political level against trans individuals and against visibly, radically out queer individuals. And it concerns me a great deal. I worry about my ability to be out, be a trans person out in the world, and exist safely in society.
Here on Vashon as well as
even
the
here
rest
on
of
Vashon,
the country.
Even here on island.
Yeah, and even in back when we were in Seattle, which is a very progressive city, you were still getting all sorts of random stuff on the street that let's not go into, you know? But And I would also say, like, at the end of the day, I worry far less about us than about our broader community. I think while we do have concerns and anxieties, we're in a relatively privileged and safe place. We're in a community that will, at least to some degree, have support for us. And not everyone has that access. I have friends in states where they are losing hormone access, or they are possibly losing hormone access. I have friends in states where, like, they can't even consider starting that sort of a thing because they cannot be out because of social repercussions. There's, you know, like, as much as, you know, you're 100% in right in talking about those anxieties, at the end of the day, that's my bigger fears are for the broader community and for the people in places of less privilege than us.
Well, we have gone over time, and that's worth it. Any final comments you would like to make for our listeners here on Vashon Island and the world? This will be on the web.
I think my biggest comment is, and has always been, keep building community. I mean, the queer community was here for me and has saved my life many times over. And it's only because of the hard work of everyone who I've ever met in building that community and maintaining that community and supporting each other. That's how I have lived as long as I have, and it's how we're going to get through whatever comes our way.
Lee,
she basically stole my answer.
Okay.
I was absolutely going to talk about community and what that does. Like, being able to create and exist in spaces of queer people, of trans people, where those sort of the assumptions around gender norms and gender roles are a little bit more broken up, has been extremely healing. And then additionally, like, I don't think it's a thing where you need to create specifically trans or queer community. I find that at the end of the day, first of all community is valuable. Second of all, my experience as someone marginalized in one way allows me to relate really well to the experiences of people marginalized in other ways and connect to those people. And I find that to be extremely rewarding and healing and supportive. And also, like, friendships and communities across age differences, I find is very important. We have a whole generation of queer people that got lost to AIDS, and, like, connecting with older queer people is, frankly, very vital in learning the history and not repeating the same mistakes, in finding sort of that multi-generational community that has that living knowledge and that living history.
I cannot thank you enough, both of you, for your candor and your insights. And I hope that the community beyond the queer community, at least here on Vashon Island, provides you with as much support and welcoming as you deserve. You've been listening to A Vashon Minute. I'm Susan McCabe, your host. This has been a Pride Month special with my terrific guests, Brooke Osment and Lee Katarin. Hopefully I'll get your name right one day. Thank you very much for listening. I appreciate your spending some time with us here on A Vashon Minute. And stay tuned to the Voice of Vashon. You never know what might come next.